another champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Sometimes you gotta stay in.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Cleveland Browns Daily for a Thursday here on ESPN 850 WKNR. We are online at ClevelandBrowns.com, ESPNCleveland.com. Dave DiNatale in for the vacationing Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. Jason Gibbs here as well. It'll be the two of us with you today and tomorrow. We got a stacked show for you today. I was telling Gibbs before the show, it feels like it's been like 3 months since I talked about the Browns on any of my shows or anything, on the Hooli show or anything. So excited to talk a little bit of Browns today. Coming up at 1:30 on the show, we'll continue our series here on Cleveland Browns Daily, CBD Replay, some of the great interviews that have been done, really going back to the draft and this offseason, such a busy offseason for the Browns. We'll hear from Penn State head coach James Franklin. He'll talk about Carl Nassib, of course, the Browns rookie defensive lineman. Also talk about the Big Ten and a lot more. We'll play that for you at 1:30. Real interesting interview that we want to play back for you again. At 2 o'clock, we will have our continuing Browns 2016 opponent preview. We will head to Tampa Bay. Remember, the Browns are going to play the Bucs again in the preseason. Gibbs may actually get to spend more than just a day in Tampa. You may actually be there for 3 or 4 days because the Browns are going to spend some time with joint scrimmages and practices down there, Gibbs. So,
yeah. We'll see what happens. If you want to fly me to Tampa for a week, I'm totally fine. Although it is going to be a steam bath of all steam baths.
Yeah, in late August. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. We're either going, I know the team's flying down Monday, scrimmage or practice slash whatever they do, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday will be technically like an off day.
An off day, rest day, preparation day.
Correct. Yeah. Walkthrough, whatever the case might be. Friday's the game. So we're either going down Monday or we're going down on Thursday on a commercial plane.
One way or the
I'm
other.
Not a big fan of commercial flying during football season.
Well, no. When you get to fly on the charter.
Spoiled.
I understand that.
Yeah. When it's all you can eat Chick-fil-A and things like that, you tend to get a little spoiled.
If I'm trying to remember the schedule off the top of my head. You don't have any terribly long road trips this year.
There are no 5-hour flights this year. I could not be happier.
No trips to Oakland or Seattle or anything like that.
I love to fly. I have no problems flying. I think it's fantastic. It's the greatest form of transportation. And 5 hours, 5.5 hours is a long, long time in a plane.
Yes.
You go stir crazy. There's only so many movies you can watch. I'm very pleased that the farthest we're going is South Beach.
Yes. We'll talk about the Tampa Bay Bucs. Greg Allman, he's the Bucs and NFL beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times. We'll talk to him at 2 o'clock. We'll also play another edition of Factor Fiction. You can climb on board, as always, here on Cleveland Browns Daily. 216-578-0850 is our number. Tweet the show at Browns_daily. Gibbs will be monitoring Twitter as we go. You can tweet the two of us at Dino Cleveland, at BGSU Gibbs. I got to start, Jace, by reacting to another crazy night in the NBA.
Just when you thought it wasn't going to get any crazier than Durant Day on Monday.
Yeah.
It takes a whole nother turn last
night. So much for that. So I'm here last night, you know, doing the Hooli show till 7, then with Munch until 9, and then doing my evening responsibilities. And, you know, the Dwayne Wade news comes out. And frankly, not terribly shocked that he's leaving Miami. When you think about it, he wants that one last huge payday. And frankly, I think he had gotten disgusted with Pat Riley. So, sayonara, I'm going back to my hometown. I'm going to Chicago. And that's it. But of course, in order to make the deal happen, the Bulls had to shed salary. Now, on Bruce's show yesterday, we had both ESPN's Brian Windhorst
and the Akron Beacon Journal's Jason Lloyd. And both those guys essentially told us, look, you know, what you see is what you're going to get with the Cavs. They got to re-sign Richard Jefferson. We'll get to that, obviously. Got to re-sign J.R. Smith, but don't expect to see a whole lot from the Cavs because they just don't have a lot of resources to go sign players. But then Mike Dunleavy, for the cost of did we even get the official terms on that? I think it was for
I'm so confused about those. And well, the numbers and it's exception. Is it the Varejão exception?
Yes. But the Varejão exception had been, I think, $9.8 million. I don't know if you still get to keep what's left after you pay. I think Dunleavy was $4.5 million. I've got to do some capology work on that today.
Did not go to school for math.
No, I didn't either. It's not my strong point. I readily admit that. I know what I am. I am not a math guy.
I took one class in college, Intro to Stats.
I did too.
And there was a phenomenal looking female in the class that I became very good friends with, Delta Gamma.
Well done.
Yeah, well, that made the semester go by a little quicker.
I only had to take one. Intro to Stats, I think it was mine, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's all I got to take? Done.
Okay, I love
Let's
being a communications
major. Let's
done
with this.
Yes. One math, one science, I'm done. That was phenomenal. So the Dunleavy news comes down, and, you know, look, we're all on Twitter around here, and we were, you know, watching the headlines, watching things happen. I think a couple of our teammates, I'm not going to name who, retweeted something that Mike Dunleavy had apparently, so we thought, tweeted, a hashtag the land. Well, I don't know if Mike Dunleavy's on Twitter. It looked legit. I'm like, oh, very cool. He's excited about coming here. Click. Well, as it turns out, my man isn't on Twitter. So, of course, you know, you get occasionally the trolls, as we call them on our on the 5 o'clock show, the trolls, dolts, and provocateurs who love when you make mistakes.
Because they never make mistakes.
Because they never make mistakes.
Ever.
And a mutual acquaintance of ours, Gibbs.
Oh.
Bowling Green's finest, Nick Sheppis. Just a buddy of Jason and yours truly, tweets me and goes, come on, Dino, you're better than this. It's got to be fake. I'm like, you know what? Look, it looks sincere. I mean, the man wasn't on Twitter very much. Oh, it's not authenticated. And then I just like, you know what, dude? Go to bed. I'm like, I love you, but go to bed. But you know what? I told Nick I'd come on air today and I'd give you a mea culpa. You were right. I was wrong. So that happens. Nick Sheppis has one on me, Gibbs. Old college buddy.
1-0.
1-0 Sheppis. So that happens. And then we go to Snapchat. You use Snapchat a little bit, don't you?
A little bit. I'm a little terrified of sending the Snapchat out because I haven't exactly figured that out totally. And the last thing I want to do is send a Snapchat out to everyone. Because that would end very badly, I feel like.
Yes.
Because I get Snapchats from Casey Kulis and Dave Spano on the road. And
dangerous.
I get Snapchats from Eric Williams and a few other
people. Highly dangerous.
Here, and I go, if I did this and did it wrong, it would end very badly.
Yes. Sometimes it's just better. Snapchats is one of those things. Okay, just better. I already have
I like to get it.
Yes.
I like to read it. I like to see it. I get a good laugh, and that's it.
Yeah, the 140 characters of rope of Twitter is enough for me.
Fontana Snapchats his life, literally.
Well, that doesn't
when he's drinking beer.
That doesn't
when he's
surprise me.
Eating food. Yeah, Fontana. Yeah, Fontana Snapchats everything.
Like because I've periscoped, but not Snapchatted. But Richard Jefferson loves him some Snapchat from his little Kev Snapchats during the course of the playoff run for the Cavs. Last night he announced his return to the Cavs via Snapchat. 2-year deal. I think Chris Mannix of The Vertical on Yahoo reported that it was 2 years worth about $5 million. So good news there. Richard Jefferson's back. That certainly helps. So you start to get to a feeling now of what the Cavs roster is going to be shaped out like as we go forward. I still think they want to, you know, try to utilize that veterans minimum and maybe see if they can find a big man off the scrap heap. I think Ethan Skolnick in Miami tweeted last night the Cavs are players for the Birdman, Chris Anderson. So you might be a Birdman coming north here.
Well, I know one person that's tight with the Birdman.
I do too.
He's the host from 5 to 7
yes.
on this fine radio station.
Yeah, when I told him that rumor was out, that Nugget was out there, I mean, he was smiling going, yeah, this is great.
I like the Dunleavy acquisition. And the fact you got Richard Jefferson back, I think is great. Are you still able to get J.R. Smith back?
I think if his asking demands are in the Jamal Crawford neighborhood, 12 to 14 a year, 2 year maybe with an option, yes. I think the Cavs are perfectly fine doing that. It's a cost of doing business. They can't go out and find somebody of comparable skills in this market given their limitations. So, unless we're talking, ridiculous money, I think it's going to be something where he wants to come back. They want to have him back. I think they'll make something work.
Yeah. I the Cavs are clearly in no hurry to bring him back. So, and that's not saying that they don't want him.
No.
That's just saying, let's see how the market shakes out.
That's
because
exactly
right now
what
there's a lot of people getting paid a lot of money that I'm not so sure need to be getting paid that much.
Yeah. I think some of it was, let's see what happens to the top tier of shooting guards, and that was DeMar DeRozan, for example, gets astronomical bucks from the Toronto Raptors. So you kind of start there. And then, as I mentioned, guys like Jamal Crawford, Lance Stevenson is another one to keep an eye on because how he, the contract he gets will have an impact on J.R. Smith. Comparable shooting guard talent. But again, unless this is looking like you're north of $15, $16 million, the Cavs are going to get him. I believe that. I don't think anybody's going to break the bank for JR.
No. I think there's still a little buyer beware that he had one good game in the NBA Finals. And still that hole when it's truly on the line. I'm not saying you didn't earn it.
Did you feel that way sometimes in the postseason?
Yes.
That sometimes the game might be a little too big for JR.
Yeah, that's what happened last year.
Yes. He had to be the number two option.
Yeah. I've said it. If he's the number four option or the number five option or even the number three option, his life is a lot better and he is a much better and more relaxed ball player. It's when other things happen and all of a sudden he's got to become the man. And right here, he doesn't have to be the man.
No. He's got it. He's a fan favorite and he doesn't have to be the man.
Correct.
He's the number four option on this team. And that's not going to change. Jefferson's back. Dunleavy's in full. That's not going to change. Shumpert, he's still the number four option because he still has that ability to score in bunches. So that's not going to change. And I think he's comfortable here. I think the Cavs are comfortable with him. So we'll see when it gets done.
Right now, if they can bring JR back, you have got a much deeper bench than Golden State.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
your team-wise, you're in pretty good shape right now. I like the team that you've got going on.
Well, think about Golden State now. Now, they add Durant to go with the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala. But now you sit there and you go, okay, you don't have Bogut anymore. I know they got Zaza Pachulia. I don't want to diminish Zaza and David West. But
the ring chaser.
But you don't have Barbosa. You don't have Barnes. You don't have Bogut. You don't have Festus Ezeli. So all of a sudden now, that one of the advantages that the Warriors always had on teams is that they could go 10, 11, they could play 11 players. Right now, that seems unrealistic. Now, you could say, well, guys, don't be absurd. They're so good with who they have in their five or six. They don't need anybody else. But, Chase, as we know, it's a long – 82 games is a long season. A
lot can happen.
Before the postseason starts.
You know, you got to have a little luck, and part of that luck is staying healthy. You know, I mean, if one of those big four go down – and I just – my whole thing with the Golden State Warriors is the guy that's going to become – that this is going to affect the most is Draymond. And Draymond's the leader of your basketball team. It's not Steph Curry. It's not Klay Thompson. The leader in your locker room is Draymond Green. And if Draymond's not getting touches, okay, you better be winning basketball games.
Yep.
Because if there's any kind of adversity, I see Draymond going off and things not going well.
What about Klay Thompson? I'm not so sure he's going to be a happy camper. Steph Curry sounded like he was all, you know, in the conversations that they had with Durant, he's fine taking the back seat and being the number two guy. I'm not so – I wonder about Klay Thompson, his willingness to all of a sudden be the number three. Because as we see here with the Cavs and Kevin Love, you know, it's one thing to be – it's easier said than done to go from being – one and 1A to all of a sudden being the third option. It's not easy.
No.
Ask Chris Bosh about that too.
Yeah, I think Klay and Draymond are going to get a lot less shots.
Yes.
Klay's going to get a lot less shots, and it's harder to get into a rhythm if you're not getting your shots.
I'm fascinated to see how that's all going to play out.
Not a huge NBA guy. I prefer the college game.
Yes.
But – you know, and obviously you never miss a Cavs game, but I will be fascinated to watch Golden State because you've got a four-time scoring champion in Kevin Durant.
Right.
Who's going to need the ball?
Yes.
You know, and then Steph Curry, you've got a two-time MVP.
Who loves to shoot from any spot in the
never,
front court.
Never took a shot that he didn't like.
Right.
And he makes a lot of them.
Of course he does.
And Klay, you know, all of a sudden now you're getting into that Klay Draymond. Are there going to be nights? Is Draymond Green going to be okay if he only ever if he's scoring 5 to 8,
yeah,
5 to 10 points a night?
If Draymond's numbers look like, let's say, Kevin Love's numbers on some nights where you're getting 8 points, 7 rebounds, and a block shot, you're going to be all right with that? Your history doesn't suggest that you will be.
Nope. Klay Thompson, you're going to be good if you're getting 5 to 10 less shots, maybe a game?
I don't know. I'm
this could be a one and done year for this.
Well, and on a couple of reasons, because remember, Wendy talked about this yesterday. Durant can opt out, and Curry could be a free agent at the end of next year. And you don't know what the collective bargaining agreement is going to look like in a year. And you don't, Wendy's confident the NBA will again try to come up with rules to prevent super teams, to continue to kind of make it more difficult to bring multiple superstars together like this. So, yeah, this could be a one and done thing. So, you know, for those of you in love with this Golden State team, you might only get 1 year to enjoy it.
Yeah, which I'd be totally fine with, because the Cavs, as I've said, and Wendy and I talked about it last week on Hey Wendy, totally good with the Cavs standing pat. Bring back your own guys. You bring in a Dunleavy. You get Richard Jefferson back.
Yeah. You nurture and develop a guy like Jordan McRae, a youngster that, you know, you think maybe might be able to play a few minutes. I don't know. You know, we'll see.
You get a healthy Shump back.
Yep. Boy, that's big. If he's the Shump of 2 years ago, that's huge.
Yeah, he's your sixth man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, lots to get into. Obviously, we're interested in the Cavs here on Cleveland Browns Daily. But thinking about the Cavs and the Warriors and the rivalry now that's kind of blossomed over the last 2 years here with the NBA Finals, want to get into this thought of rivalries coming up next here on the show. What made me think of it, I was coming into work today. The Yankees are in town to play the Indians. Now, Yankees are having a so-so year. They may end up being sellers at the trade deadline, which is always interesting. But advanced ticket sales, even before the Indians' win streak, have been huge. I was always brought up as a Cleveland sports fan, talking Browns, don't like the Steelers. Really don't like the Steelers, don't like the Bengals, and of course now add the Ravens to that. The Cavs' biggest rival, obviously, Golden State. The Indians, is their biggest rival the Yankees? Money and statistics would say so, but I'm curious about that. And, you know, thinking about that, who do you dislike more as a Cleveland sports fan? Steelers, the Yankees, or the Golden State Warriors? Think about that. It's Cleveland Browns Daily. We will, go till 1:30 here until CBD replay. We'll hear from Penn State head coach James Franklin. But time for your calls and tweets, 216-578-0850. On Twitter, at Browns_daily. You can also tweet me at Dino Cleveland, Jason at BGSU Gibbs. It is Cleveland Browns Daily right here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dino and Gibbs in for Zagura and Wilhelm here on Cleveland Browns Daily. 216-578-0850 is our number. You can hit us up on Twitter as well, at Browns_daily. I'm on Twitter at Dino Cleveland. Jason is on at BGSU Gibbs. From Maryland 47, Michigan is the biggest rival because Ohio State is the best professional team in Ohio. I don't want to diminish that, though. I was talking about the pro sports. But, yeah, I mean, Michigan certainly is – that's a huge rivalry. I mean, obviously.
That team up north?
Yes.
That we don't speak of?
Yeah.
Yes.
Rob Branham says, Steelers, I'm always going to hate them as long as I have a breath in my body.
Yeah, I go with that.
Yeah, There's nothing. I'll tell you, I love the city of Pittsburgh. It's a beautiful city. That's about where it ends. There's nothing about Steelers I like, man. Nothing.
Nope. The other day, actually Tuesday, I'm working out at the gym Tuesday morning, and I don't know if you know this or not, but Hines Ward's working like for CNN. He was live at the hot dog eating contest on Monday.
He's working for CNN?
I saw him on CNN, and wow. He was on Headline News this morning. And I was like, you son of a... Uh-huh. And that stupid smile, I'm going to knock those front teeth
yes.
out. Not a fan.
Not a fan.
Not a fan. I'd like to do...
I can't...
I do not like Hines Ward.
I'm trying to think if I were ranking my all-time least favorite Steelers, he'd be in the top five. Roethlisberger would be in the top five. James Harrison.
Roethlisberger doesn't...
You know what? Roethlisberger's like Elway. Always, because you think you have him, you think you sack him, and he comes back and he throws, you know, a 50-yard touchdown pass when it looks like he's sacked.
Gotcha.
James Harrison would be up there.
Oh, yeah.
Bubby Brister would be up there. Because got to remember, I really started watching the NFL after like a year or two before Bradshaw retired. So none of those guys really count.
No. But Bubby Brister.
Bubby Brister.
There is nothing better than when he was on his back in a football game.
And then the NBC's camera would go to Bubby Brister's mother. And Bubby Brister's mother would just, you know, not rooting for anybody to get hurt, but Bubby's mother would just go, oh, my goodness. You could just tell. I couldn't stand Bubby Brister. I don't know about you guys. There are terrible towels, another reason why I couldn't stand the Steelers. I mean, there's just always reasons why you just hate the Steelers. All right, 216-578-0850, talking rivalries and talking about an interesting 24 hours from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Reggie in Youngstown gets us started. Reggie, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks. Hey, I just wanted to say, first of all, right quick, how you guys feel about the Steelers. I feel the same way. And probably even more. Do not like them at all. But I really called to say, in general, I like guys. If we get Ray Allen, if we can talk him coming back, and we also, you know, what's the guard coming from Chicago that we already got picked up? What's his
Dunleavy.
Name? Dudley, yeah. Guys, I think that's a great move. That's a great move. I see the Cavs really doing well because I think Dudley is more of an offensive player than what Dela Ladova was in general. And I think, man, that's a great move. And plus, his offense has really been doing great. He's been playing some great ball these last two or three years. So with the pickup of that right there, guys, I think that is going to be great right there. And I just wanted to say the last thing, fellas.
You got it.
In general, is the fact I think pretty soon, right beside our world championship pennant of our Cavs, we're going to have the Indians, man. Indians going to win the pennant, fellas.
I'll tell you what, Reggie, thanks for the call. They certainly have every opportunity to do so. I don't think there's not a super team in the American League. I mean, the Rangers are playing well this year. You know, keep an eye, obviously, I mean, Baltimore has been on a losing streak, but, you know, keep an eye on Baltimore and Boston. But I'll tell you.
I don't know what the infatuation is with Boston. They got like five or six guys going to the All-Star game. And I get why Ortiz is going.
Yeah, I do too.
And
but
a couple of their, I'm not saying a couple of their guys aren't deserving, but I'm like, you look at their record and then you're like, it's not been an impressive job by John Farrell and his staff.
No, I mean, they've been fine. I think the Indians certainly have the pitching. There's no question about it. The Indians have the pitching to make a postseason run, a deep postseason run. I'd like to see them bolster the back end of the bullpen a little bit, give some more support to Shaw and Allen, maybe add a bat. But this is a good team, and this is a very good team. And it's been a fun summer already for the Indians. And, you know, it's interesting. We bring up the Tribe because the Yankees are in town this weekend. And by the numbers, by the sheer force of attendance, it would make one believe that the Yankees are the Indians' biggest rival. That's the reason why we're bringing it up. Jim in Akron wants to talk rivalries next. Jim, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing today?
We're good.
I wanted to say something about the Cavs, but the team I hate the most, and I think it's reinforced by all that pea yellow and black of the Steelers that we have to see all the time in our hometown. That, you know, half these people have never even set foot in Pennsylvania, let alone, oh, I'm a fan. They're a bunch of bandwagon people. And we used to call Bubby Brister Punky Brewster.
Yes.
but with the Cavs, you know, Allen, I mean, if he's got anything left, I don't know if he does. I would rather steal from the team if Golden State has to let go of Livingston. Why not bring in him with his length and this kid that we got in the draft? Sound like he's a poor man's Allen Iverson. Maybe he can turn into a, like the Celtics have Isaiah Thomas, you know, a small guard that, you know, just can come off the bench and just give you a little boost. And Dunleavy, I think we're going to look good for a repeat and we'll have another parade with the Indians.
That would be great. Jim, thanks for the call. Kay Felder, I don't know what you have in him.
Let's just get this out of the way right now. That guy was taken because the owner wanted him. That's all it is. I'm going to tell you right now, in doing the Hey Wendy show, there is no one else in that organization that had any interest or was even on a radar screen.
Because he played at Oakland?
Yes. 100%. It's an owner's pick. So for those of you expecting something, I would love to be proven wrong. I would love for him to be the Mike Piazza of the NBA and being like the whatever back-end pick just as a favor done. I would love for that to happen. I don't see it.
Yeah. If you look at the Cavaliers, Jordan McRae is one guy that, again, you may see him take a step up. That might be my one worry, Jace, is that, you know, with Dela Vadova gone, Mo Williams, if you bring him, assuming he's going to come back, he's exercised his player option. Is that your only backup point guard option? I mean, I know we're talking like small concerns, but the one thing you don't want to do is burn out Kyrie Irving. If I have any concerns, They're small ones like that, spots on the roster. But the Cavs, given what they've had to work with, which, you know, they spent so much money last year, Cavs are having a good offseason so far. But it's interesting to hear you say that about Kay Felder.
I brought it up right after he was drafted. We did the show. And I said, Brian, what about? And he goes, don't even ask me. You go back and listen to the podcast.
I know that voice.
He goes, never going to be a blip on the radar. It was done. It was an owner's pick.
To pacify the owner.
That's what he says.
When he's more plugged in than
anything. I have to go with that.
I agree. Real quick, Tony in Canton before we hit a break here. Tony, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Hey, I was just telling your screener, NBA has a really bad taste in my mouth right now. I'm not very motivated to attend even a Cavs game after seeing some of these contracts that were passed out. Al Horford, $27 million, and he scores 14 points a game. Mozgov, $16 million a year and played sparingly. I just don't understand where where's the concept, where's reality at? These guys are not worth the money that these owners are dishing out, and we, as the fans, are the ones that are fueling this fire, and I just feel like fans are like a sheep or a herd of cattle. I mean, they just go up there regardless, and it just boggles my mind how a guy averaging 14 points a game is worth $27 million.
Yeah, no, Tony, I completely understand. Thanks for the call. I completely understand. This is a time right now in the NBA where, and the NFL certainly has had, you know, this happen to them, where you're getting a kind of a confluence, so to speak, of attendance and big time TV revenues. That huge contract with ESPN and Turner has made the NBA very, very rich. You've got to share the profits with the players. Yeah, the numbers are a little bit ridiculous, but just to understand this, the Cavaliers, by virtue of having some foresight and doing things the right way a year ahead, didn't have to, you know, remember all last year, we were all worried about Tristan Thompson and, man, this guy's worth a max contract. Well, yeah, in this environment, yeah, he's worth a max contract. It's hard for working people to relate, and I get that. But just know, at least the Cavaliers, from that standpoint, are handling things, I think, the right way, and there's a championship to prove it. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters, doesn't it? I'm all about a championship. On Twitter, at Dino Cleveland, at BGSU Gibbs. You can also tweet us at Browns_daily. We'll get to more of your tweets later in the show. But G Money says, guys, talk about rivals. I hate the Ravens. The move. Their pathetic fans justifying Modell. Simply the worst. There is a special loathing, I think, that Browns fans will always have for the Ravens. And you could say, well, it's been 21 years. Get over it. You know, like David Modell did and tried to do in the Believe Land 30 for 30 documentary. You know, how much, I think David said, how much of a pound of flesh can you extract? Yeah, I get that. I understand where G-Money comes. Yeah, when you play Baltimore, there's just always, you guys stole our team. And those scars never heal. As much as we hope we would like them to heal, or much as other people would like them to heal, it doesn't work that way. All right, coming up next here on Cleveland Browns Daily, we'll go back into the machine a little bit and give you CBD replay. Penn State head coach James Franklin joined the show and talked about the Browns draft pick, Carl Nassib, the defensive tackle, the Big Ten, and a lot more. It's a fascinating conversation. We'll hear from James Franklin next as Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dino and Gibbs in for Nathan and Matt here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Before we get to James Franklin, let's hear from JC in Cairo, Ohio. JC, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, I was inspired to call because of the all I've been hearing is everybody griping about all this money that these players are making, and they're guys that don't have the numbers like before that justified the income. My call is simply for one thing and one thing only, and that's comparison. Comparison, I believe, always reveals the truth. I work in intellectual property management, so it's some passion of mine. Here's the bottom line for comparison. Back in the day, there was a TV show called Friends. Everybody knows about it. The six actors, the producers didn't count on them becoming friends. They unified when their contract came up. Mm-hmm. They said, all for one and one for all. Sound familiar? They demanded the outrageous sum of $1 million per episode. And guess what? There's 22 episodes in a season at that level. That's 22 mil a year each for all six of them. Then, of course, guess what? In hindsight, since TV declined so much, those producers would be paying twice that much gladly to have them back on the air now. Why do I bring this up for comparison? These NBA players, they're not athletes. They're TV stars. That's where all the money comes from. And there's only 12 of them on a team. And there's only 30 teams. That puts them in the elite of eyeballs on the screen. If people looked at it that way instead of looking at it as athletics and what their points per game are and all that stuff, it's non sequitur when you look at it as from a business perspective. That's pretty much my take, fellas. And I'll tell you what, I'd love to go into more, especially with what Jim Brown did against EA when he won $600,000 out of court
right.
by illegal use of his image. And then if you want to get me going, let's talk college athletic scholarships, where these players sign over the use of their likeness and names and don't get any royalties. Perpetually, it's shameful. But, you know, again, it's a passion of mine. But anyway, just for perspective for your listeners, think about that. No one griped when the Friends got $1 million each. In fact, they lamented the loss of the show when they went on to richer pastures. That's my take on comparison, guys.
JC.
It's like a Jim Rome take.
That was. I'm out. I mean, if he had just
I'm
said,
out.
I'm out. Rack him.
still
okay.
Racking people?
I don't know. I haven't listened in a while.
Makes two of us.
Yeah. Okay. But what I would like to listen to now is today's edition of CBD Replay. We go back to when Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm welcomed in Penn State head football coach James Franklin to talk about the Browns' new defensive lineman, the rookie Carl Nassib, talking Big Ten and a lot more. Here is James Franklin.
Coach, let's talk about Carl Nassib. What are the Browns getting in your defensive player of the year in the Big Ten?
I think you guys are going to love Carl. Not only is he a really good football player, but just a great story. You're talking about a guy who's a pre-med major here. You're talking about a guy who walked on, never started a game until senior year in college, and that includes high school. He was a backup in high school. The late bloomer showed up
wow.
here at 6'5", 218 pounds. Ended up 6'7", 272 pounds, worked himself into a player. Very, very explosive, very, very strong, was a matchup problem. As a guy who creates flexibility, he could put on some size and play, a three technique, could be a five technique, could be a true defensive end. He's got a lot of traits that people are looking for, both on and off the field, intangibles.
And coach, you talked about his size and you referenced him as a late bloomer. Was there anything else really holding him back, or was it just the maturation of growing into his body and then also just getting the reps? And you, as coaches, feeling it's now time for him to get out there on the football field.
Well, I think the first thing is you're talking about a really driven individual, and he had some God-given, ability to work with. He had a frame to work with, and he's just so driven. And I think he's a late developer, which, those things don't happen as much. I would compare him in some ways to David Robinson, who goes to the Naval Academy and grows 6 inches after he gets there. He's a kid who developed late in the process, stayed driven, stayed motivated, worked himself into a player. You're talking about a guy who led the nation in sacks, and he missed three and a half games. He pulled a hamstring and missed 3.5 games. He would have destroyed the sack record here at the school, as well as led the nation by a large margin if he hadn't gotten hurt.
Talking with James Franklin, head coach at Penn State, Coach Carl Nassib. Coach, can you tell something funny about him? Because this guy, everything you hear is just that he is a good guy. He works hard. Are there any funny stories about this unbelievable success story?
Yeah, I mean, he's a weirdo, guys. I mean, he is a driven, funny, outside-the-box thinker. I mean, he's a guy that's so driven, he'd call me or text me at 2 o'clock in the morning, not being able to sleep on a weekday, thinking, telling me how important winning is to him. And, he's a pre-med major, and his personality and his sense of humor. I love him because he's an individual. He understands the team concept, so he won't be an individual in a team setting. But he's a guy that thinks outside the box. He is very, very driven, very, very motivated. He gets it. He's kind of a coach on the field. He's very, very mature. His brother obviously is a quarterback in the NFL, played right at Syracuse. So, he's a guy that probably, from a college perspective, was wise beyond his years. And socially, things that interested him don't interest most college students. I love him. I love his uniqueness. I love his drive. I love his passion. I love his determination.
Coach, you believe that, some might say, well, he only had one great year, but in the Big Ten, especially as you dig deeper into that Big Ten schedule, Carl Nassib jumped out onto the scene, but yet was productive each and every week. Is why he was drafted as high as he was and why he can transition to the NFL, almost as a marked man and still be very productive.
Well, yeah, I think that's the thing that you see is he's trending. I mean, there's a lot of guys that, show up and have great years as freshmen and sophomores and then level off. This guy's trending in the right direction. And again, his frame and his body is allowing him to continue to go in that direction. The other thing is everybody knew. I mean, he was leading the country in sacks for most of the year. So, people were game planning against him and they still couldn't stop him. He was productive. He made big plays when the team needed him to make big plays. He was a matchup problem in the running game in terms of coming off and striking tight ends and DNs. He's got enough body control and wiggle and bend to beat people on the edge. He's got violent hands. I think you guys are going to love him. He is what you guys want, blue collar, hard nosed. He's going to be very appreciative of the opportunity that you guys have given him there. Not going to have any problems off the field, and he's going to maximize his potential, which most guys don't.
Coach, in a three-man front, where would you see him ideally fitting in here for Ray Horton? And then obviously in nickel situations, we know he's a natural defensive end, but in a three-man front, where would you see him fitting in?
Well, I still see him as a 4-3 defensive end or a 3-4, being able to play the 5 technique.
Okay.
Because the thing is, guys, he's 285 pounds right now, and he's skinny. I mean, he's one of these guys, if you want him to put on 10, 15 pounds, he can do it easily and still is going to look skinny because he's almost 6'7". So that's what I think he is. I think, if you change to front up on third down and want to go to a 4-down front, he's going to be able to do those things at defensive end. But he's going to be big and strong enough or has the ability to get big and strong enough to play the 5 as well.
And, Coach, you may have mentioned it briefly already, but just walk us into the player that Carl was and had to be on the practice field, just intense, wanting to earn the right to be out there and start for Penn State and then to continue to work throughout the season to play at the high level, because that is something that has kind of eluded Cleveland in the past with the past regime, that Hugh Jackson's instilling, hard work and the right to deserve the opportunity to get there on the football field.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, the media, you're going to love this guy. The community is going to love this guy. The coaches are going to love this guy because he's had to work for everything that he's been given. Was not highly recruited, did not come in with a lot of fanfare, had to earn a starting job, had to earn respect nationally, had to earn respect in our conference, and did it. And, how many times have we seen a guy that's either drafted really high or recruited really high that never lives up to his potential?
Sure.
This guy's the complete opposite. And I don't want you to take it the wrong way. A lot of times when you talk about the try-hard guys all the time, people take it as, oh, he's not talented. That's not the case. This guy is talented and works hard. He's going to create the culture you want in the locker room with the right mentality. He's going to go out. He's going to be one of these guys that when he's a veteran, the coaches are going to be able to say, look how Carl practices. Look how Carl works. Look how Carl takes notes and meetings. He's going to do everything he possibly can, you know, to make you guys all proud there. I think you're going to love him.
Talking with James Franklin, the head coach of Penn State. Coach, in the Big Ten, you ran up against another one of the Browns draftees, Joe the Show Schobert from Wisconsin. As a guy who was coaching against him, what can you tell us about his game?
Guys, I don't want to sit here and talk about something I'm not informed. We didn't play Wisconsin. I've only been here 2 years.
Okay.
We haven't played Wisconsin, so I don't want to sit here and talk when I haven't done the research to talk, you know, informed about it.
Well, that's a very fair answer. We appreciate that.
As you can tell, I got a man crush on Carl Nassib.
Yes.
I'd love to follow back up with you guys a year from now and see what you think. And I'm hoping, you know, for everybody's sake, the Browns as well as Carl Nassib, that when we talk next year, you guys are going to love him as much as I do.
And Coach, you've talked an awful lot about Carl Nassib, and just to briefly discuss the conference in general. I'm a former Buckeye, so obviously, you know, the draft for the Buckeyes and Urban Meyer was very good, not only for Ohio State from a recruiting standpoint, but has to be very good for the conference. As, you know, sometimes the seasons go on, there's the, you know, the SEC domination and the ACC and what Florida State's been able to accomplish. But just talk about what the Buckeyes, Penn State, Wisconsin, putting guys into the NFL and what that does for the conference and recruiting in general.
I wish I would have knew you were a Buckeye at the beginning of this conversation. I'm surprised you're being so nice to me. I just have so much respect, you know, for the conference. I got a, you know, pretty interesting perspective because I came from the SEC. I was in that conference for 3 years. Now being in the Big Ten, I mean, you look at the Big Ten and what the Big Ten's been able to do in bowl games. You look at, obviously, Ohio State winning the national championship. You look at our side of the conference. You talk about Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State all on the one side of the conference. It's as good as any conference in college football. And, you know, I think that's been proven on the field. I think that's been proven in polls. I think that's been proven now in recruiting. You're seeing a spike and a change in recruiting as well. So, yeah, I think it's good for everybody. I think it's good for the game of football.
Coach, one last question for me. What's one player that you have on the Penn State's team right now that people should look out for in the Big Ten and that we could potentially see in the NFL next year that you're most excited about?
Well, I don't know about next year, but, you know, obviously there's a buzz about a young man that we recruited here in the state of Pennsylvania last year, Saquon Barkley, and Saquon had a huge year, rushed for over 1,000 yards.
Yep. Physical guy too, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's 5'11", 6', 225 pounds. You know, can make you miss, can run for power. He's got a number of traits that people are looking for physically. He's humble. He's got a chance to be special. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But we got a number of guys that we're excited about. You know, this is our first year back to 85 scholarships. We were 65 my first year and 75 last year. So we're excited. You know, we got a lot of work to do still, but we're excited about the direction.
Coach, I want to ask, as I look at Carl's game logs from a year ago, one of the big themes here is bringing it every single day, consistency. And you look and you see he had a sack in every single game last year when he was healthy. And I know he barely played against Michigan State, et cetera. But how does he do that week in and week out when you talked about people game planning for him right from the get-go? Did that force him to kind of develop his move set so that he could have counter punches to what teams were trying to take away from him?
Yeah, it's those things, but it's also things that most college guys don't figure out until they get to the pros. It's how do you take care of your body? What's your nutrition like? How much sleep are you getting? I mean, people have no idea how valuable that is, at least college kids. They have no idea. And it's funny, they all go to the NFL and then they come back and you're like, you know, they come back from working with a trainer or their agent getting ready for the combine and they just talk about, coach, it's amazing. I've changed my diet. How much better I feel. I said, yeah, what have we been telling you for the last 5 years? You know, so he gets all those things. He's gonna maximize the meetings. He's gonna sleep right. You know, he's not gonna be partying. His nutrition is gonna be right. You know, he's gonna do all the things necessary for him to come to work every single day at practice. If he can't practice for whatever reason, he's gonna be pissed off about it. You know, he's one of them old school guys that, you know, is gonna maximize his his opportunity. He's going to maximize his potential. And there's not a whole lot of guys that are doing that anymore.
If there was one game that you would want Browns fans to go, because now, you know, people can go to Draft Breakdown and they can get the game-by-game cut-ups of all of these players, that is the definitive Carl Nassib game in your mind, which one was it this year?
You know, I don't know, because it wasn't like that. It wasn't like he, you know, had a flash moment or a flash game that put him on the national radar. You know, the reason he led the nation in sacks and the reason, you know, he got the type of respect that he got is because he did do it week in and week out. You know, it was a crucial times of the game. It was, you know, it was against a MAC opponent. It was against a Big Ten opponent. It was against, you know, week in and week out, whoever we played, where some guys, you look at their stats and they're skewed because maybe they get most of their production from a lesser opponent and then don't show up in the big games. That wasn't really Carl. He showed up week in and week out. So I wouldn't say there's one game to go look at. It really, the thing that makes Carl special, the reason why I think he's a safe bet in terms of the draft, is because of how he did it. He did it week in and week out with a lunch pail mentality.
James Franklin, head coach of Penn State. Very impressive. It was the first time I really heard him in an extended interview like that. Nothing but glowing praise, as you would expect for his Nittany Lion, Carl Nassib, who will be heading for his first training camp with the Browns later on this month. All right, break time for us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Next month, the Browns will be headed back to Tampa Bay for another preseason matchup with the Buccaneers. That'll be preseason game number 3. That's always the most important as preseason games go. We'll take a look at those Tampa Bay Bucs. Greg Allman, he's the beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times for the Bucs and the NFL. He'll join us next for a preview of the Buccaneers as Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.